You are listening to Grandpa Lempsheets on RadioArian.com.
It's Tuesday once again. You know what that means. Church of the Lampshade. Grandpa Lampshade here with you on the one and only Radio Area Network. Glad y'all could stop by. As always, it's bound to be a lively discussion. We're bound to hopefully have some great thoughtful things. And of course, the center of the show is our Christian message for the remnant of Christianity. And in the nationalist audience, or whoever you may be that might be stopping by, hopefully you'll get something out of that. This is installment number 25 of the Church of the Lampshade show. Want to say thank you to the four different people who have chosen to financially support the show. It is very much appreciated. I am a very humble lampshade, and I do appreciate it. If you want in on that, that information's at the bottom of the page. We got snail mail. We got Bitcoin. I can pretty much get what kind of cryptocurrency you may want to use. No pride here. I'll take your stellar lumens. You know, that's... I'll take your stellar lumens. Just drop me an email. Let me know. I'll get you a cryptocurrency address for stellar lumens or whatever the hell you might want to unload at the moment. But yeah, we got that. Email is also at the bottom, grandpalampshade1@gmail.com. Drop me your questions, comments. Always good to hear from you. And hey, we may even use them on the show. We're kind of easing back into doing that again because it makes my life easier because I'm kind of lazy sometimes and I don't have to sit here and think about things to discuss. Speaking of things to discuss, we got a couple things. I thought we'd always, of course, have our discussion before we sit down for our Christian-centered message. And I've got a couple things I just jotted down. And I haven't thought these through. This isn't like, oh, I've already thought all this through and then I just kind of have to go through it on the show. These were just concepts that over the past couple of days I was thinking about, and I just jotted them down. And one of the things I was thinking about is this. We have this innate human need, it seems like, to struggle. What does that mean? Now, I'm not talking about, you know, every race on the planet has to struggle for their place in the world to survive. I'm not talking about that in the broader context. I'm talking about on the individual level, as a people, as a person, you as an individual, we have this innate, I believe, this need to have something to struggle against, to have an obstacle. This sounds kind of silly, but we're gonna go into what made me think of this and why. Because again, as always, what we do here on the show, whether it's in the Christian sermon or our discussions before, and we try to get to the truth. That's it. It's that plain and simple. You know, we try to get to the truth of the matter, or at least as close as we can. So what about this innate need? This need as people, individual people, to have something to struggle against. Well, one of the things that was on the news this past week is Robert Kennedy's granddaughter. Yes, it's been that long. Robert Kennedy's granddaughter, I think she was in her early 20s. Very attractive young woman. She died, and that, you know, because it's a Kennedy, that was big news. You know, how many other people have died? Nobody cares. But since this was a Kennedy, this was big news. This young woman died. And when I saw the news story, because they were like, oh, family, they haven't released the cause of death. I'm like, but it's a drug overdose. And then later in the story, they're like, you know, well, unnamed sources said it was a drug overdose. Surprise, surprise, a wealthy person dying of a drug overdose, a wealthy young person dying of a drug overdose. But I was thinking about this because they were saying a little, they were talking a little bit, and no, I'm not here to rag on this young woman's death. I mean, you know, I don't know her personally. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm sad over somebody's death that I don't personally know or have any interaction with. But I was thinking, this got me thinking, because they were giving out some factoids about this young woman. And he said, since she had put up a post of, you know, since she was in middle school, in junior high, she started her struggle. She had posted a thing that since I was in junior high, I began my struggle with depression. And this is something I have to live with my entire life. My struggle with depression. In junior high. Now, you know, kids, especially as they begin to enter puberty, I mean, yeah, they'll struggle with depression. It's a very real thing because a lot of it is hormone based. You know, they're going along, they're little kids, and then all of a sudden they get hit, boom, with the hormones as they enter puberty. And your mind, if you're a young person and you're a teenager, I mean, your mind is going to go through things. Your mind is going to go through things that things get twisted, your perspectives get, and a lot of that is just simply chemically based. I mean, if somebody was dropping speed or dropping acid, you know, LSD, and they were telling you, oh man, I saw the most clear vision of flowers, and you would be like, yeah, because you were hallucinating, you know, because you took in chemicals that caused your brain to have a hallucination. And if you're a teenager and you're listening to this and you're going through like a depression or something like that, you have to understand that as real as that feels, a lot of that is just an acid trip because your brain is screwing you up. Your brain with the hormones and all of this, it's essentially releasing chemicals into your body that you've never had before. And it's your system is trying to get back in balance, and it will. Just give it time. It will. You might be a teenager and depressed. It's a very common thing. And there are triggers for it. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, well, the reason you're depressed as a teenager is no big deal. It's a big deal to you. Now, it's very real. You have an issue. You know, whatever that may be, whether it's girl problems, boy problems, Facebook drama, whatever it is you're going through as a teenager. I'm not saying that what you're struggling with isn't real. What I'm saying is you have to understand that a very large part of it and your lack of ability to see a bigger context is because you're on an acid trip, as it were. Your body is releasing hormones and doing things, turning you, making that transformation to an official adult. And as a result of that, your body's out of balance. Your brain is out of balance. And if you can just hold out, if you just wait out, that will get, it'll clear up. You know, you don't make it. That's what makes a lot of this transgender stuff among kids and young people so disgusting. Of course, when it comes to little kids, it's very disturbing because that's being pushed by usually insane single moms, pedophilic dads involved perhaps, or just whatever the case may be. But as far as in teens, you know, they talk about putting these teens on hormone blockers and this and that because they're trans. And a lot of that is, again, the fact that you're on an acid trip. So it makes it so ridiculous. They're wanting, as a society, they're pushing to permanently alter the way these young people can grow up and grow forward when they're in the middle of an acid trip. It's like trying to react to an LSD trip as though it were reality. A lot of this, a considerable amount of this, might just be your body and your mind and everything. They're chemicals and stuff imbalanced, and wait it out and get, let it all get sorted out. And then you can move forward. Now that, you know, they're pumping hormones and doing treatments, talking about, you know, mutilating these young people's bodies, and a lot of what they're going through may just be simply a part of the chemical imbalance. But look, it's 8 minutes into the show and I've already wandered way the hell off topic, which was a need as individuals to struggle. I was thinking about this young woman, this young Kennedy woman, who died of a drug overdose. And as working people, poor working class people, lower middle class, whatever you are, I mean, as working class, blue collar type people, we tend to think everything would be solved if we just had money. You know, if I win the lottery, what would I do if I win the lottery? Well, I can tell you what the worst thing you could do if you won the lottery, and that is to just not do anything. We as people, I believe, I was thinking about this, it's like we have this need to have something to struggle against. If you're a working class person, it's probably your finances. You're struggling, you want to do more, you want to, you know, take your family on a vacation, whatever, you know, there's that burden. There's that struggle financially. I mean, even if you're not like a lower, let's say you're an upper middle class person, but you still have a struggle. I mean, you still have to go to work. You're making six figures a year. Say you're making $150,000, $200,000 a year. You're doing pretty good. You got a nice house. You got a nice car. Your wife has a nice car. But, I mean, you still have to work. I mean, there's still a struggle involved there. You still, again, you got to make the mortgage payment on that nice house. You know, your wife is wanting you to take her on a nicer vacation this year. There's something to struggle against. The point is, there's a struggle here. But you look at someone like this young woman. She's born into an extremely wealthy family. Money will never be an issue for her. Well, I mean, that post once societal collapse, having some sort of ability to buy and sell whatever may be a big issue for a lot of people. But under the current system, with the assumption as most normie people have out there, that it's going to go on like forever. Under the current system, I mean, she's never going to have to worry about money. She's born into a very, very wealthy, very prominent family. She doesn't have to save up for a car. She's not going to have to go do it. Her life is set as far as money. You know, they talk about this young woman and, you know, she was very concerned about human rights. Oh, yeah, 22 years old. I'm sure she was very educated and having some extremely in-depth thoughts about human rights worldwide. Of course, it always has to be worldwide. They can't worry about human rights here at home. I don't know, maybe unless it's about, you know, people other than white people. But it's always about worldwide human rights. Yeah, I know what 22-year-olds are thinking about, and it's not deep intellectual thoughts about human rights. I guess what I was getting to is when you look at these people who are wealthy, be them, I don't know, celebrities or like this young woman. She's born into a wealthy family. Money will never be an issue. And honestly, probably nothing will be an issue. I mean, she's a Kennedy. She probably went to college. I mean, she very likely went to college and skated through because she's a Kennedy. I mean, are you going to be the professor that gives a failing grade to the young woman whose family might have, like, make sure the college's doors stay open, you know, contributed me. I don't know that has happened. But the point is, I mean, financially, her life is, I mean, it's easy street. She can do whatever she wants to. And what happens is we see someone like this and they're on drugs and they're making posts about when I was in middle school, I first grappled with depression and I will have to grapple with this my entire life. As a working class person, your reaction is depressed about what? You've got like more money than you're ever going to be able to spend your entire life. You don't have to work. Your life is set. You're so depressed. And we mock that. We do. We make fun of that when we hear these rich people complaining about, oh, I'm so depressed. And they're so depressed, they wind up getting on drugs. And they have to self-medicate. They're so depressed. And it's like, depressed about what? Your life is set. You're rich. You can buy anything you want. You can go anywhere you want. You can pretty much do whatever you want. Oh, but they're so depressed. And we make fun of this, but I was thinking about the fact that we have a human need to struggle. So what happens when there isn't an external struggle? I mean, that's for a minute, instead of just, you know, mocking these people for being like, you know, idiots or something. Let's think about it on a deeper level. What happens? What really actually happens when you don't have a struggle? When your life is set, you're born like this young woman into a very wealthy family, and your life is set. If you want to go to the Bahamas for spring break, that's not an issue. If you want to go see Paris in spring or Somalia, it's more or less the same difference. You can do that if you want to go to a Arab market, or i.e. London. You can do that. I mean, you can pretty much do whatever you want to. In other words, there's no struggle. What happens when there's no struggle? And I was thinking about the fact that perhaps what a lot of this comes down to is not necessarily a case of these people being spoiled and not knowing how good they have it, you know, because that's going to be, yeah, we react to it, right? We're about some wealthy person, somebody's got it made like that, and they're, you know, battling depression and they're on drugs and they have to go to rehab, and we are sitting there like, you are so damn spoiled. You know, you're sitting there looking at your electric bill going, how the hell am I going to pay this? But maybe it's not. Maybe it's not simply a case of being spoiled. What if it's a case of being wired where we have to have a struggle? So what if when you don't have a struggle, when you're like this young woman, you're born into money, you got it made, you got life on the easy street, but there's nothing, there is nothing to struggle against. You know, what happens? And I was thinking that perhaps what happens is subconsciously, your brain will just make a struggle up. You know, you wouldn't do this consciously, but your mind would make a struggle up. Now, you also try to invent a struggle consciously. These are all works of your mind trying to create something to struggle against. Your car, and for this young woman, as an example, on a conscious level, well, I'm worried about, I'm working for human rights worldwide. She doesn't even know anything about human rights. It sounds silly, but perhaps on a conscious level, she's trying to create something to struggle against. Worldwide human rights. She's creating a struggle. And on a subconscious, of course, that's very shallow. It's very vague. What's she going to do? Basically, her struggle for human rights will amount to, she'll write a check to some organization. They'll say, oh, thank you so much. And they'll hand her a plaque in exchange for a check. And that was a struggle. This not, winds up not being an actual struggle. You know, her consciously, she was trying to create, I mean, she probably didn't even realize what she was doing, but she was trying to create some sort of something to struggle against, but that was empty because it wasn't real. Again, it would amount to writing a check to an organization and they, oh, you're doing this great work to help us struggle against human rights or against human rights. That's possible too, but for human rights. So then on a subconscious level, what happens? The subconscious begins to create a struggle. The subconscious is in such a need to have something to struggle against that it creates one. Depression. Depression and drug abuse. It's depression, which leads to using drugs to self-medicate because you're having this unpleasant feeling. And voila, you've got something to struggle against now. Yeah, I'm battling on a personal level. I'm battling with this depression. Now, I'm not saying this is the case for everybody in depression. There's working class, but there's all sorts of people that struggle with depression. But I'm talking specifically for these types of people who have no built-in struggle. You know, it's kind of like an area of nature where there's no natural predators and things get out of balance. It's sort of like that. When your mind doesn't have anything, an obstacle to overcome, some next thing to struggle against, it will wind up making something to struggle against. And perhaps that's why we see these people that have it made, as we like to say, quote unquote. But it's on a very shallow way. They have it made financially. But they don't have anything to struggle against, which causes their minds to get out of bounds. Their mind will start ultimately, it'll invent something. I guess that's the thing here is if you don't have anything to struggle against, quote unquote, if you have it made, your mind will just invent something. It'll invent something to struggle against. And yeah, you know, and so that's why perhaps a lot of these people that when we view it, they do these things. They get on drugs and they talk about how depressed they are. Perhaps, yeah, instead of simply just dismissing it out of hand, we should recognize it as the human mind's ability or need, rather, to have something to struggle against. It's kind of like when you do, if you've ever known people that, like, you know, I'm going to retire. Oh, I can't wait to retire. And you ask them, well, what are you going to do when you retire? I'm going fishing. Well, that's a vacation. That's not really, you know, and they do. They wind up, they finally get to retire and, like, they go out of their minds because they're so bored. You know, some of them wind up giving up on life and they just kind of die because, you know, perhaps that too is a case of they no longer have anything to struggle against necessarily, you know. But anyway, just something I was thinking about. I had another thing I'd kind of jotted down, a concept, and it again, I hadn't really thought it out. It was just a concept, and I thought we might sit here and visit about it before we get into this week's sermon message for the Remnant of Christianity. I was thinking about communists versus nationalists or national socialism or whatever, and I was thinking about how misled. I'm not talking about the Marxists that push this from the top. Let's think about rank and file, regular, the rank and file, the people, the leftists, the leftist on the street, as it were, the young person, the millennial, whatever, that, you know, self-identifies as a leftist, as a Marxist, or progressives, or whatever the hell they want to call themselves. It comes down to some form of communism. And I was thinking about how silly a lot of that is, in the sense that all of the things they want, or they, a lot of things they claim they want or they desire, has communism ever brought that up? Which communism is the full bloom flower of Marxism. You know, they sit here and try to pretend they're something else. You know, they try to pretend. That's why they have all these different names. You know, some of them still try to use the name liberal. So progressives. We're very progressive. But there, it all comes down to Marxism, cultural Marxism. But it winds up being Marxism. And Marxism, in its full bloom, is communism. And you look at the things, and again, I'm not talking about those who are leaders, who push this, who finance it. They have an ulterior motive. If you're a rank-and-file leftist, and you're listening to this show, I don't know, I guess because you just want to gin up your hate level or something. You're listening to the show, say what that damn lampshade says this week. But if you're a rank and file leftist and your issue is healthcare for everybody, or, you know, your student loans, you want the government to pay your student loans off, or whatever your pet peeve issue is, you understand this. The people who allow you to organize, who help organize you, who find it, you've got your handy matching flyers that y'all, or signs that you all wave around, you ever stop to ask who's paying for that and why? Well, I can tell you that the ones who are paying for it, they don't give a shit about your college tuition, okay? They don't give a shit about your health care. It's about power. You're a tool. That's it. You're just a tool. You're just a tool. You're no different than when the government sends some soldier unknowingly to go fight a war for Israel in the Middle East. You know, the soldier doesn't know. He thinks he's fighting for America. But he's just a tool for those in power. And you are a tool for those who have power over you. They don't care about this. I'm talking about the rank and file leftist. These things that they say they want. When you look at Marxism, in its full bloom of communism, doesn't provide any of those things. It's a lie. Doesn't provide you a cutting-edge, quote-unquote, free healthcare system. When has communism ever provided the people a guaranteed living wage? A guaranteed job that you could be fulfilled in. A guaranteed positive outcome. It's never happened. A lot of the things the rank and file leftists claim they want. I mean, a very good argument could be made that at least under, say, National Socialism, I mean, some of those things began to come to fruition. Now, you know, it didn't get really a chance to see how well it would play out, because then it was warred against, because it had to be shut down. It had to be stopped. Now, people like myself, I believe that as the current system collapses, and I say this a lot, but I think it's important to be specific. You know, I believe that we're not bound to just try to repeat what somebody else has created. I think we could create something new. And I do. I believe National Socialist principles should and could very well play a very fundamental part in establishing and building something new. Because a lot of times when you say National Socialism, and people, they think you like want to recreate National Socialist Germany. That's not realistic. It was the past. It was a different time, different people, different circumstances. Although there are some similarities. But I mean, when the founders of America created America, I mean, you know, they took some different things, different systems, different principles, and tried to put something all together. And it kind of worked for a little while. But yeah, let's look at National Socialism versus your communism, because at least under the short period of time that National Socialism existed, some of those things, I mean, workers' rights were pretty much not a thing pre-National Socialist Germany. I mean, they weren't. I mean, they were, come on. You sit here and act all high and mighty now. I mean, you know, 1920s, 1900s. I mean, they were working little kids in factories in America. And no, you didn't have OSHA to ensure there was safety. They were putting little kids in factories, little kids in coal mines. These horrible, horrible working conditions. If you were around, you were working in industrialist America in 1919. And what, you went to your boss and said, I want a vacation? They don't even know what that word means. Didn't exist. It probably existed, but I'm saying it didn't exist in the context of the society here in America or anywhere else in the world. It was National Socialist Germany that basically introduced the beginnings of ideas of workers' rights that actually followed through. Now, see, the communists, they always promise that. They always promise these great workers' rights and the people. The people should be the worker. We care about the worker. But it's never come to fruition. When they gain power, that was always the end goal of those who push Marxism, who push it to its full fruition of communism. It's about power for themselves. It's not about helping the worker. But in National Socialist Germany, they actually began pushing forward, coming through. They came up with a program of like a lottery where they would send their common workers on a cruise ship to go to other parts of the world, because they thought it was important not just to give the people a break from their crappy factory jobs, but they thought it was important for the development of the people themselves to go see other parts of the world. That's a strange concept from a supposedly scary, xenophobic, racist, white supremacist society. They thought it was important for their people to go out and experience other cultures in the world and see how, you know, that the world is bigger than their shitty 12-hour day or whatever it might be factory job. Animal rights? Do you think animal rights existed in 1920s America? The very concept of outlawing cruelty to animals, again, that was a big push for that in National Socialist Germany. And again, I'm not trying to like give this impression that we need to try to recreate National Socialist Germany. I'm trying to lay out a contrast that we've seen a couple of things. And again, National Socialism in Germany didn't really get a chance. I mean, it got a very short period of time to function before it was made war against. But it got to, at least we got to see the bud of the flower begin to open. where communism, we've got to see communism in its full bloom. And in no period of communism, from when it was just a budding to when it was in full bloom, were the workers given any of the things they were told they were going to get under communism. And yet the rank and file, the modern day Marxists, the modern day leftists, the rank and file guys who think they're going to get health care that doesn't bankrupt them, that they're going to get a job where they can earn a living with dignity and a decent living and not treated like a piece of crap or number, who think they're going to like get, they're being promised like a life like their grandparents had of a retirement. Again, they're being told they're going to get this through Marxism, and Marxism in its full fruition is communism. And it's never provided those things. It's provided things such as bread lines. And I dog on the current, the current usury scheme, Zog, facade system. I dog on capitalism, it's not even really capitalism. This corporatism, capitalism crap that we have in America as much as anybody. But we don't have bread lines. I mean, you've got an iPhone and you go down here and eat some shitty processed food at McDonald's. And I don't eat clown food, and it's crap food. But I mean, if I'm given a choice of standing a bread line for 4 hours to get a half a loaf of bread and, maybe boil some grass or have grass soup with my bread or go eat clown food, I mean, I'm going to get the freaking chicken McNuggets. I'm not going to lie. I mean, they're beaks and asshole. What's in these chicken McNuggets? Well, they process every part of a chicken. What do you mean? I mean, what do you think they do with the beaks and feet? They're not letting that chicken ass go to waste. They're grinding that shit up. And that's what you're eating in your chicken McNuggets. And I'm still going to eat the chicken nuggets before I go stand for 4 hours in a bread line, given a choice. They always have to, eventually, when you point this reality out, what the right people didn't try it? I mean, we've seen several stabs at communism worldwide. If communism is a utopia, try to immigrate to China. I don't want to do that because of the oppression. What? Oppression? Communism? No way. Who would have thunk it? And yet, you promote Marxism here because you've been promised all of these empty lies. You've been promised that you if we just create a leftist utopia here, it's the same lies, folks. Look, I get it. You want a job with dignity. People sit around and say, oh, these young people, they're lazy. They just don't want to work. I don't know. Maybe I'm overly optimistic. But I think a lot of these people really do want to. They do want to work. They want a job with dignity. They want to be able to be proud of what they're doing. They want to be able to go, they don't know how, maybe. Or maybe they can't because of the modern system that we have that has become so corrupt. But whatever the case may be, I think deep down inside they do want to work. They don't necessarily want to be handed everything for free. But they just don't see the opportunity there. And the opportunity, in all fairness, I'm not even sit here like a normie calling and say, you just gotta pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Look, the opportunity may not really be there for these people, for some of them, for a lot of them, under the current system. But yet, they're being promised these things by Marxists. And look, you've got multiple historical examples, the Soviet Union being the most prominent one, of what you get if Marxism in full bloom. I mean, it's not like you don't have anything to go by. I mean, at least National Socialists, even the National Socialists who have this vision of like just carbon copying, National Socialist Germany and somehow transplanting that into modern society. I mean, at least that's more based on reality because they can point to the peaceful years of National Socialist Germany and say, look at the prosperity. The rest of the world was in the Great Depression. Well, National Socialist Germany's economy was booming. Workers' rights all of a sudden became a real concept in the world for the first time. You know, respecting nature, taking care of the environment. Do you think anybody cared about the environment in industrialist America? But environment, you know, taking care of the environment was a part of National Socialist ideals. You've got two examples here. And one, while it had a very short time here, being tried in a real world practice, you get a snapshot of what it was able to bring about, at least in a short period of time. Communism, on the other hand, the Soviet Union hung around for a considerable amount of time. So you've got a bigger picture here of what Marxism in full bloom brings about. And it damn sure isn't any sort of utopia. Let's wrap that up on that note. We got to get in here to this week's sermon, this week's message for the remnant of Christianity. And whoever wants to hang out and listen, I mean, you're always welcome, even if you're not a believer. I'm not running you off. You're welcome to sit in the back pews there and listen. You're welcome to come in, sit in, and listen to the Christian message. It's a lot of fun. It's uplifting, I think. Who am I to say? Oh, yeah, I'm the Reverend Lampshade. So get on in here. Fill those pews. That's right. It's time for this week's sermon in the Church of the Lampshade. So as you get in here and get yourselves comfy in the pews as we get ready to sit down and talk about our Christian-centered stuff this week. You know, one of the things that's really off-putting to people, and of course, the modern cuck church in all of its various forms and denominations, it's become like a mockery of the word of truth, of real Christianity. You know, it's like Satan, he mocks, he's a mocker, and as a reflection of this, the modern cuck church being completely subverted to this world, it too is a mockery of what Christianity is, of what the truth is, of the ways of the Lord is. It is. And people point to it and say, see, Christianity. Well, now the subverted version. But we point this out a lot, I guess. I guess I'm kind of beating a dead horse a lot of times. But I think these points are important. And we try to find various ways to illustrate that. One of those ways to illustrate that is the foot washing thing. You know, people point to these modern versions of the things that Jesus demonstrated, and they'll say, look at that cuckery. See, this is what Christianity is. And I was thinking about the foot washing thing. Of course, what brought this to mind, probably you're having the same picture pop into your head of like the anti-pope, the current pope out there washing the Africans' feet, you know, a big photo op. And there's the pontiff, you know. Of course, they take the picture so that you don't see like the layer of, but probably like at least 30 armed security guys that surround him at all times. You know, he's got that pope mobile. He rides in. Rides around him with a bulletproof glass, you know. So, yeah, they take this picture. Like as though the Pope walked out of the Vatican one day and was like, you know, I'm going to go wash some Africans' feet. And there just happened to be some photographers there. You see these things and you get triggered by them, and you don't even stop to think about sometimes the context of them, because you're not. You're supposed to see this, receive the message of the image, and not give it any further thought. But really, you see that picture that was presented, and it was presented with an agenda, the globalist agenda, the Satanist agenda. You're given this image, and you're supposed to simply take the image at face value, receive the message of the image. There's the Pope washing the African's feet. You see, we should welcome all of Africa into Europe. It's the right and Christian thing to do. Look, there's the Pope. Why were you supposed to believe that the Pope woke up, walked outside the Vatican, found some Africans? You know, probably had to go, you know, he had to go outside of the security range of the Vatican, because, yeah. And there just happened to be professional photographers there. They snapped the shot, and voila. The Pope is like 24-hour Secret Service tier security. I mean, that's a fact. So, you know, not in the picture. So it's not like these Africans were going to jump up and steal his Pope ring. And that's probably why they had this funny look, you know, because you see the funny look on the Africans, like, what the hell wrong with this cracker? And I'm sure that was part of it. But I mean, the other part of it was probably like they're looking at all the, you know, because you come from Africa and like somebody with the only people in Africa that are going to have that kind of security around them are like warlords or government people. And if they show up and you're just like a regular African sitting on the street, you probably fixing to get offed. You probably fixing to get macheted or some shit. And he's sitting there and sees this guy. I don't even know who the hell the Pope is. And he suddenly sees this crazy white guy show up and starts doing this weird foot washing thing. And the guy's surrounded by these intimidating armed security people. Africans are probably sitting there thinking like they're fixing to wash me up before they put me in the pot. It is fixing to cannibalize me or some shit. I wonder why they don't have any idea what's going on. So what you don't see in the picture is all of the security, the arranged, scheduled thing. Somebody no doubt brought the Africans in, paid them money to sit there on the bench to do this photo op. They didn't even know for sure what the photo op was about, but someone gave them some money. So, you know, you got to get the money if you're going to get the hoe. So they got the money. They came in. This was all, the point is, this was all a staged event to send the message, the globalist message. And yet people look at this and say, the foot washing, look at this. And the Pope himself, well, this is the example Jesus set for us, that we should wash the feet of third worlders who have invaded, who have come into our nation, who aren't even Christians, who are probably Muslim or whatever the hell, I don't know, probably practice a voodoo religion or some shit. We should be washing their feet and kissing. Kiss their precious feet. This is what Jesus would have you do. Okay, we got the picture. He's like mouth washing his shit and tells the security, you know, get these animals out of my sight or something. I mean, you know, come on. It's all, the point is, it's fake. It's fake. It's not real. If the Pope himself really believed that shit, he would follow the biblical principle of not knowing, you know, not letting your right hand know what your left hand is doing. He would have snuck out there and made sure there were no photographers around and washed and kissed the African's feet if he really believed that shit. But he doesn't. He doesn't. It's kind of like we were just talking about how the Marxist leaders mislead, you know, the run-of-the-mill leftists and tell them that they want to bring about all of this workers' paradise for them and it's all a lie. It's the same thing. The Pope, you know, this is a message for the rank-and-file Christians. This is a false message for the sheep. He didn't believe that. If he believed it on a personal level, he would have snuck out and it wouldn't have been a photo op. You'd have just never known about it. Except, you know, some Africans going around talking about a crazy white man coming around and washing and kissing their feet. But just like how the communist leaders lie to the run-of-the-mill leftists, this is a lie perpetrated on the Christian community. Now, this is an important thing, and I don't want to gloss it over. We're going to get into the particulars of the foot-washing thing. But the fact that this is a lie being perpetrated on the Christian community. We throw around terms like Satanist, you know, and I'm not, look, when I talk about what this Pope is doing, I'm not sitting here saying if you're a Catholic, you're a Satanist, because we've all heard that sort of denominational bickering and slander. That's not what I'm saying. I am not calling Catholics Satanists, but I'm saying what this person is doing, what this Pope is doing by perpetrating a lie. It is Satanist. I said it. It's Satanist. It's of the devil. Because the devil is a liar. He is the father of lies. It's what he does. If it's not in truth, and again, you look at this foot washing photo op, it's not of truth. It's a lie. So if it's of a lie, if it's an intentional effort to perpetrate a lie on Christian believers and to the world of what Christianity is and what the foot washing thing means, then it's of the devil. It's that plain and simple. I beat this to death. I beat this topic to death to where, you know, Jesus, the central word for Jesus is the truth. And that's so important and gets so overlooked. I do. I think it gets overlooked in the modern church. Of course, they're so busy having motivational speech about what a great person you are and that no matter what you do, Jesus loves you. So you can basically be a big a shithead as you want because you're really a great person. And now put some shekels in the damn offering plate. So I stopped the other day. I finished up Korean drama, and you know, because I don't watch American programming except for I catch the news. I get the 90-second news blurb to see what the narrative is for the day, and I watch the local news long enough to get the weather, and maybe play a few rounds of guess the race of the criminal. You know, police are seeking information on two suspects who randomly attacked a man for no apparent reason, and you're sitting there going, Yeah, of course, there's no description, but then we get to the, here's surveillance images. Those teens, those crazy teens at it again. So a lot of times when I finish watching Korean drama, you know, I'll put it over on the news channel. So when I get up in the morning, I just turn the TV on and I can subject myself to roughly 5 to 7 minutes of American news programming. So I'll set it over there on the channel. Anyway, last week. On Sunday, I did. I was watching Korean drama and I flipped it over the news channel and I kind of stayed up a little later than I normally do. It's like 11 o'clock or something. And there was one of these mega church preacher guys on there. And I don't remember. It might have been a week before. Like, anyway, regardless. And this guy, I watched it for a minute. I mean, it was probably not much more than I probably watched about 3 minutes of it at the most. And this guy was just yammering. I wouldn't buy a used car from this guy. And yet there's this huge mega church filled with all these people. Anyway, he was going on and on and on and saying nothing. There were just these empty words. And it was essentially a message about how, like, you are the center of God's universe. Like, God sits around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, staring at you, you know, because, like, I don't know, he doesn't have anything else to do. Or something. And there's this huge, huge building just full of these people. It's amazing. But the truth, get back to the point here. I got off topic. Sorry about that. But this idea that Jesus is the truth. So if Jesus is the truth, Satan is the opposite. And I thought just a little quick blurb to highlight this once again for the umpteenth time. Let's see here. Let's look at John 18, start at verse 37, Jesus before Pilate. Pilate therefore said unto him, art thou a king then? Jesus answered. No, you know what? Let me stop there. I think I want to back that up a little bit. Let's back up, same chapter. Let's back up to verse 33, because I'm sitting here, I think we even put a little more context about the truth here. Let's see. Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall again and called Jesus and said unto him, art thou the king of the Jews? And it's funny thing, Jesus never, Jesus wasn't running around making this claim. Jesus answered him, sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it thee of me? So he's in other words telling Pilate, you're just repeating what, huh? Somebody else has put in your ear. This is what other people say you're about. The lies. And we all are subjected to that on some level or another, isn't it? I mean, it's like we try to speak this message of truth. We try to speak of what we really stand for. And you turn on the TV and what do you get? White supremacist haters that commit the worst violence in America. There's a violence epidemic from evil white supremacists. And we're like, what? What? Hey, because they're looking at you. They're looking at you. You're like, that ain't me. I'm just trying to say, you know, this insanity. I'm pointing to this insanity. White supremacist hater. Jesus answered him, sayest thou this of thyself, or did others tell it of thee? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Thine own nation and chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done? Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from thence." It's got a bigger mission here. If he's not doing the will of the Father, he's saying, "I'm doing this voluntarily." You know, then that's the thing that gets lost a lot of times. Jesus went through this voluntarily. He could call down an army of angels and wipe everybody out, but he didn't. But this is what I thought. That was just kind of the background. This is what I wanted to highlight for our topic here as we move forward. Pilate therefore said unto him, "Art thou a king then?" Jesus answered, "Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto what? The truth. Everyone that is of what? The truth heareth my voice." Yeah, I talk a lot. I realize, and you know, it troubles me sometimes because I do. I feel like I sometimes beat dead horses. I feel like, you know, I bring these things up over and over and over again, and it probably too much, to be honest. The truth being the central tenet of Christ. I talk about this a lot, but here's another example of where Christ himself is saying it. Let's say it again. "Thou sayest I'm a king. To this end was I born." To this end. This is the whole point. "And for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth," i.e. some people are not, "heareth my voice." Some people are not of the truth. Again, we blow up the modern cuck church version of everybody's God's children. Everybody goes to Jesus loves everybody. No, he doesn't. "Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice." Guess what happens with the rest of them? Off to hell you go. But the point here is the truth. "For this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice." So on the opposite end of that, what is satanic? The lie. Those who bear witness unto the lie. Those who spread false doctrines of lies. This is satanic. You don't have to throw around the term, "Everything I don't like is satanic. It's of the devil." No, nobody's saying that. But if it is not of the truth, then it is of a lie. So it's not of Christ. And that is the point here. So when you have something, as we started talking about here, a photo op opportunity to promote an agenda, the globalist agenda being done by this Pope of the foot washing thing, it's all a lie. You know, you're supposed to come away with this impression that this just randomly happened. And look, the Pope was walking down the street. As if the Pope goes out and just strolls around random parks full of Africans. Hey, stop the Pope mobile. Stop the limousine. Security, I'm getting out here. Y'all just wait here. I'm going to go take this stroll through this nice park filled with Africans. It's a lie. It's a staged event. This was organized, which means they had an agenda. The Pope just randomly deciding to wash some Africans' feet. It was a staged event. It was a lie. Bring in the photographers, bring in this, you know, have the security out of the picture and make it look like he was just walked up randomly to these Africans in the park. It's a lie. And if it's a lie, it is of the devil. It comes down to being that simple. It really does. I mean, when you're trying to figure out where things fall on a spiritual level, you just weigh them on the scale of truth. Jesus talks about himself and his purpose, truth, 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 over and over and over again. So the opposite of that, you can figure, if you want to know how satanic something is, look at how big of a lie it is. Look what the agenda is. Look at the lie. Let's talk about the foot washing thing. Because again, I mean, because of this sort of cuckery and this sort of lies, this is, you know, look at the foot washing thing. There's your Christianity. The Pope is out there washing Africans' feet. It's... let's see here. John chapter 13. We're going to start at verse 4 and go till whenever here. So, yeah, they're at the supper, Last Supper here. And Jesus is getting close to fulfilling his mission here on earth, you know, his duty. The whole climax is coming. We haven't been arrested yet, but it's coming close. He riseth from supper and laid aside his garments. Again, this is John 13, starting at verse 4. He riseth from supper and laid aside his garment and took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poureth water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter said unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? You know, Peter's like, whoa, what are you doing here? You know, you're the master, you're the guy, and you're going to wash my feet? This isn't right. This isn't right. Jesus answered and said unto him, what I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. So it's not just about washing your feet. Jesus tells him flat out, I'm doing something bigger here. You don't understand what it is, but you will later. Whew, doesn't that ring a bell for you? When you see things that are happening in your own life, and then later, you know, later on, you look back, and wow, you know, you realize then, you get kind of an idea that, wow, God was actually doing something with that. And you didn't even know it at the time. You know, later you could look back and you get it. But at the time, you're just struggling with it. You're just trying to figure it out. You're just trying to figure out the problem or overcome the obstacle, whatever the case may be. And you didn't even realize that God was at work. I was reflecting that we could do a personal thing here. I was reflecting just yesterday. I was sitting around. I do this sometimes. I don't know. I think it's a white guy thing. I do. I think it's a white person thing that we tend to reflect a lot on our mistakes, or we get nostalgic, and we just think about old times, things such as that. I do. I think that's such a white person thing to do. And I was just kind of reflecting back over certain events in my life. And some of these were events that I myself categorize as mistakes, you know, as things I shouldn't have done, things I'm not proud of, you know, I was thinking about different things. And again, I think this is primarily a white person thing. You sit there and reflect on things and mistakes you've made in your life. And I was doing this very thing. And I was thinking about times when I made decisions or took actions and honestly, that were sinful even. And just general error, you know, things that it's like, man, that was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that. And yet I take heart in the fact that I do fully believe that what we're doing right now, what I'm doing right now with you, with all of you, what we're sharing here, I do believe this is something God wants me to do. I do. I believe that. Not something just say to myself to feel better about my life. It's something I really believe. And I was thinking that, you know, I wouldn't be right here, right now, doing what I'm doing. I wouldn't. I would just something I come up with myself. It's like, I wouldn't be where I'm at doing what I'm doing right now with all of you. And thus, you know, doing what God has intended for me ultimately to be doing, had I not gone through those events, had I not even made those mistakes, even if they were sinful, had I not made the mistakes and the errors of the past, all of these things have led me to wind up being where I'm at right now, doing what God wants me to do. You know, and I was reflecting on that, and what an amazing thing that is. And it's not like God was sitting there ordaining. I was like, you got free will. It's just that God lives in eternity, so he already knows where it's going. It's not that he manipulates you and you don't get to make your decision. It's just he gets to see the big picture, and so he already knows what decision you're going to make. So it all falls into his plan, and you will wind up where you need to be to do whatever it is, that whatever work it is that God wants you to do. It's like that here when he tells Peter, "What I do, thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter." You don't want to understand it now. You're going to reflect back on this in the future, and you'll understand it. You'll get it later when you're at a place that you, when you're at a place where you can reflect and you can understand what I was doing when I did this. Peter saith unto him, "Thou shalt never wash my feet." Because this is an act of humility. I mean, you know, Peter here isn't like rebelling against Christ. He's trying to hold Jesus up to honor. He feels like Jesus is doing, I mean, Jesus is doing a humble thing. Humiliating in a way to a certain level. And Peter's put off by this. Never going to wash my feet. No. I'm not going to see humiliated like this. Peter saith unto him, "Thou shalt never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me." Simon Peter saith unto him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." So if that's the case, then do all of me. I want to be all in here. Jesus, I want to be all in, is what Peter's saying. Jesus saith to him, "He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him. Therefore said he, ye are not all clean." So after he had washed their feet, and had taken his garments, and was set down, he said unto them, "Know ye what I've done to you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet." Now, here's something that you need to keep in mind. Jesus didn't go out and wash the feet of random-ass strangers, much less foreigners who weren't even in, you know, who like invaded the country. He was doing this to a specific group of people, his disciples, his bros, those in his circle and his group. You know, he wasn't going out doing this for random people. There's one instance of him sitting here doing that, and here it is. And yet what? We're told under the lie that as Christian believers, we're supposed to go up to random strangers and wash their feet. It is a lie. Jesus was doing this for a specific group of guys. His disciples, his followers, his bros. Again, "If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also to wash one another's feet." This is an illustration. There's nowhere in the book of Acts where the disciples go around, you know, making a big thing about washing each other's feet. It's an illustration about guarding against pride, about struggling with your own egos when it comes to the things you're going to have to do. Who is the greatest disciple? Who's the greatest apostle? It's about being humble. It's about humility. Let's continue on here. "You should wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you." Again, in his inner circle of believers. Not random ass strangers. Not, he wasn't going out washing the feet of unbelievers, and he wasn't telling the disciples to do so. So what is with the globalist message, the lie perpetrated in all versions of the modern cuck church, that foot washing, that you're supposed to go wash the feet of random ass people who aren't even believers? That's not what Jesus said here. It's a lie. "For I've given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If you know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. This is so heavy. It really, verily, verily. Let's say it again here. This is verse 16. And we're wrapping up our scripture reading here. We're wrapping up this segment of the show. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. Again, he's stressing humility there. He's stressing being humble. None of you, some of y'all are going to go on and do great things. He's telling the disciples, some of y'all are going to go on and do great things. None of y'all are greater than the master. None of you are greater than the one who sent you. And I'm sending you out into the world is what he's telling them. Now, there's something you can take from it. Because Jesus, again, he's warning the disciples against power struggles. I mean, look at how many people make everything about their own ego. You know, they say they want to be, you can't be for something larger if it's all about yourself. You can't promote something greater than you if you make it all about you. You know, that just makes sense, doesn't it? You cannot be for something. You cannot be promoting something that's larger than yourself, something bigger than you, a bigger thing than just you, if it's all about you. It runs in contrast. Now, there's something else, though, you can take from this. When Jesus says, you know, no servant is greater than the master, no one who sins is greater than the one that sent him. You know, again, it can be discouraging as we struggle this world with this world and the persecutions of this world. And understand that the world hates you. The world hates you. The world, the fallen world hates you. So you wind up with these persecutions, and they're not always necessarily directly, you know, this is happening because of what you were doing in your faith. Sometimes it is, but not always. But you have to understand that it's a basic, like, knee-jerk reaction. The world hates your guts and wants you dead. Because the world, you know, Satan has dominion in this world right now. So you'll be persecuted for these other things, not necessarily always directly attributed to your Christian faith, but it is. It's because the world rejects you. Those that are of the world, they tend to prosper and do pretty well. Not always. Even they suffer sometimes. You know, they're just not high enough on the ladder. But you as a believer, you're going to be persecuted because the world just knows you're not of the world. So when Jesus talks about how no servant's greater than his master, I mean, you've been through you're going through some crappy stuff. You know, you're going through some really hard times. You're really struggling. You're facing some real challenges. You are. If you are, you will. If you're not, you will someday. You probably have in the past. You probably will again. This is just life. But understand that, I mean, no servant's greater. Nobody's crucified you yet. You know, I don't know what you're going through, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're not facing crucifixion right now. You know, you're not facing being, you know, beaten and publicly beaten and then crucified and publicly executed. You're not facing that. So you have to understand that if the world hates the master, no servant's greater than the master. Nobody who sinned is greater than the one who sent him. You got to understand, they ultimately did this to the one who is over us. The one who sent you. You're not going to be treated well. Yeah, the world's not going to love you. You are set apart from this world. You really are. You know, those that are of the world, the world loves its own. Christ, look at the sufferings of Christ. I mean, read, sit here, go through the talk of what Christ went through in his execution, the torture and the ultimate execution, and read it with a mind of putting yourself in the first person, putting yourself in Christ's shoes. A horrible, horrible thing. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, you ain't been through nothing like that yet. But understand, the same world that did that to our Lord, Jesus, our Savior, the Son of God, I mean, the same world, we're dealing with the same world that did that to him. They're not going to love you. So understand that and just kind of take heart in that. If they hate him, they're going to hate you. That's just, it's just simply the way it is. So again, here, as we wrap up, we look at the foot washing thing and we compare what it actually was and what it actually represented. Christ was admonishing the disciples that moving forward, you got to humble yourself. You know, servant's greater than the one. Nobody who sent's greater than the one who sent him. If I wash the feet, then you should wash each other's feet. In other words, don't elevate yourself. Don't make it about you. Don't struggle to be the most important disciple. It's not about your ego. If I am humbling myself here, I'm setting an example for you. Don't get full of yourself. It's not about you. He set an example here. He didn't go out and do this to anybody else. He wasn't going out washing random ass strangers' feet who weren't even believers. He wasn't going out and just, oh, here's some Ethiopian on the street. Let me wash his feet. And yet, you are given the lie message that this is what Jesus did and this is what you should do. It's a lie. We've covered it. We covered the factual basis of it. You can judge for yourself. You don't have to take my word for it. Is it a lie? Is it not? We know that if it's a lie, it is of the devil. It is, if it is truth, it is of Jesus. But you see, the world and thus the devil, Satan, he likes to spice the lie up with a little bit of truth in there. You know, where it kind of reflects. Again, it's a mockery. You look at Jesus' version of the foot washing and the message he was giving in truth. And then you look at this modern photo op. And you see, it's supposed to reflect, and you're supposed to see the foot washing, and you're reminded of the story of Jesus washing the disciples' feet, and you're supposed to, oh yeah, that's the same thing, but it's not. It's not even close. It's a lie. Because Jesus did this for a specific group of guys, with a specific purpose, with a specific message and intent. While this, on the other hand, was also done with an intent, but it was not an intent of the truth, and it was not an intent of the Lord. Let's wrap that up. Hopefully you got something out of today's message. I know I kind of ramble there sometimes and I always wonder, I hope we got to the point that we wanted to give. Just remember, as you go through this life, to try to weigh, because you run into things and you're not sure, you know, what to think about it or whatever, just weigh it on the scale of truth. Because if it's true, you're probably good to go with it. If it's not true, then you best off staying away from it. You make your life, you make things much simpler that way. We're going to wrap up on that note. We're going to run a little long here. So we're going to wrap up on that note. Thank you again to those financially supporting what we're doing here. That information's at the bottom of the page. Again, email there. Shoot me your questions, comments. We might use them on the show if I think it's relevant to a whole lot of people. But it's always good to hear from you either way. So again, thank you all for listening. It'll be another week. We'll see you next Tuesday right here in Radio Arian for the Church of the Lampshade with your host, Grandpa Lampshade. We'll see you then. Take care and keep the faith.